You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to the Oil Spills Podcast. I'm host Craig Ellingson. I'm with hockey beat writers Jim Matheson and Rob Dijkowski of the Edmonton Sun and the Edmonton Journal. We're on the eve of the NHL season starting. Now, whether I actually, we're recording this on October 1st, Tuesday, and the season starts tomorrow. So whether, you know, this podcast, you hear it today or tomorrow, it all depends on when we get the thing edited and thrown up on into the old World Wide Web, whatever we're calling the internet now. Gentlemen, here we are, the culmination of 3 weeks of training camp. Has it been 3 weeks or has it only been 2.5?
Seems like months and months. I hate training camp. I'm just glad it's over.
You have rookie camp and then you have main camp with the rookies at main camp.
Oh, so yeah, of course.
It's really been going since the 5th day of September, almost a month.
Yeah. So, okay, fine. I've undershot it on either one. How was training camp?
Training camp is the same as every training camp. They look like they're an okay team in training camp, playing against half squads, with half squads. And then they start the season and say it's going to be different this year. And they've got some new players. And I think this is the way we're going to play. And then we just, if you're a fan, you hold your breath and see if all those new players can make things better than they were last year. Did they do enough in the summer compared to some of the other teams? I don't see it because the players they got were role players, bottom six players, and they are bottom six players probably better than last year's bottom six players. But whether those players can help Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who got 119 goals last year, by scoring a few more goals, is we'll see. Will they make the playoffs? You know, you'd like to think you live in Edmonton and you're – you know, you can give them their props and say, oh, yeah, they'll be eighth place. I don't see it right now, but I see them out of the playoffs again.
Well, and how much does Thomas Yurko look like Ty Ratty is my question.
Yeah, well, he's already injured, so we'll have to wait.
Is Yurko already injured?
Well, he's nicked up, so they said that.
That's having a procedure.
Yeah, whatever that means. That doesn't sound good when they say you're having a procedure.
So he's not playing?
No, he'll be out. So, yeah, two of the guys, you know, the defenseman and Yurko are already kind of nicked up a little bit. So, and I guess Sheehan's in concussion protocol. So three of the guys they brought in won't be there at the starting gate. I mean, there's a sense of optimism just because there was a lot of change. And, you know, when you have a really bad season and you change a whole bunch of players, then there's optimism, right? But, you know, you dissect these players and not a lot of them have, you know, a real strong track record or solid pedigree. They're in that situation again where they're hoping for the best. They're hoping for a lot of guys to come through and fill these roles and to some extent overachieve. That hasn't happened very often here. They're going to give it another whirl here, so we'll see how it goes.
Well, I mean, Ken Holland is grabbing a whole lot of dice and rolling them, and who knows what you're going to come up with. That was the case last year. It's been the case almost every training camp, I would say, particularly in the McDavid years, where you're trying to find the right combo of line mates for this guy. And, you know, obviously now we don't know what James Neal is going to do, if he's going to stick with McDavid's line or not, whether he's able to have a bounce back season from his piss poor season last year in Calgary. You know, obviously, you know, we don't know what the result of the Milan Lucic for Neal trade is going to be. yeah, it's to me, it's
a lot
it's
of
really
wishing
no
and a lot of wishing and hoping.
Yeah,
you're, you know, you bring in
gambles.
You bring in Europeans, and while they were good in Europe, Nygaard scored 21 goals in Sweden, which is terrific in a defensive league. And Haas, Gaetan Haas from Switzerland's on their national team, plays in the, you know, world championships, and is quite a good player. But whether they can, you know, give the team some, you know, more in goals, well, I guess it we'll have to see. I mean, it still comes down to McDavid and Draisaitl. I mean, they carried the team pretty much last year. Too many players last year had career years, and then the negative, you know, not you says, okay, Chiasson had a career year, you know, Cassian had a career year, McDavid had, you know, had 41 goals. Draisaitl scored 50. Nugent Hopkins had a career year. Will they do it again? Some of them might, but some might not. So you're hoping other people maybe pick up the slack for some of those guys.
Because it can't come down to just those two guys again. Because like you said, they just had career years last year, and that wasn't good enough. Yeah, it was good for 25th.
It wasn't close, yeah.
So we need to, you know, some miracle has to happen, because it didn't happen last year or the year before. One of these guys, if this is what we have, and outside of some trade happening where we see somebody with you know, more pedigree than any other forwards besides McDavid, Draisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins, unless someone else is coming in, we better hope for a comet to appear.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, like when your three best guys have career years, and then Cassian and Chiasson have career years, and it's still not even close to good enough, and then you come back the next year, you just say, like Maddie said, there's just a slight sag, like a 5% sag of those five players. Are the guys that they've brought up not only good enough to get them from 25 to 16th place if those guys were having career years, but are they good enough to, you know, not only do that, but overcome the 5% sag that might be in place from the top five guys? There's a lot of, like, a lot of wishing and hoping, and I'm not really sure. And at the end of the day, it's goaltending. Are those two guys good enough to, you know, be your, you know, game stealing starting net miners in the National Hockey League? And there's not a lot of confidence, maybe a little bit more in Smith, just because, you know, he has done it. Koskinen, I don't know, we'll see, but I don't know. Yeah, like, you can't miss every year. Like, at some point it all has to come together, but you just look at this on paper and you just, I don't see it.
You can't have average goaltending with an average team. Let's put it that way. I mean, if the team is average and you have good goaltending and you win lots of close games, especially early when you start to think, okay, you know what, the style we're playing, the goaltending is quite good, and maybe we can ride this the whole season. But you can't have just average goaltending in an average team. That goaltending has to be better than what is perceived in the National Hockey League as a bottom six goaltending in the league. It has to be middle of the road at worst to get this team into the playoffs, because I don't think they can outscore their mistakes defensively enough to get in the playoffs. And last year they had fewer than, you know, a point a game. So they're going to have to find 7 more wins sometime, you know, 15 more points at least, I think, to make the playoffs. And can they do that? Well, it has to come from the goaltending. Usually that's how it happens. Your goaltending adds up to a win a month, one more win a month, and then you're in the playoffs.
Even when you have a good team in average goaltending, you're really rolling. That's rolling the dice, too.
I think the poster team the Oilers should be looking at is the Islanders last year. They were terrible the year before. They gave up a ton of goals. And Barry Trotz came in, who runs a structured team, and with what was perceived to be average goaltending with Thomas Grace and Robin Lehner, who left Buffalo, and suddenly they get over 100 points, and they win the goaltending, they win a visit, you know, the Jennings Trophy is the best defensive team in the league. With a team that wasn't great, certainly their defense, you look at their defense, it's an average defense. They don't have a stud on defense. And, you know, some good forwards, but not great forwards, and they got over 100 points. So I think that's, if you're the Oilers, that's what you got to hope for, is that your goaltending holds you in the games and they give up fewer good chances in their own end of the ice and they win games.
Well, the one year they did make the playoffs, Talbot was co-MVP with Connor McDavid. So that just, that tells you right there. And then as soon as he trailed off, that was it. You never heard from this team again. So, you know, you have to be, especially on a team that isn't great defensively, you know, team defense wise included, not just the blue line. You have to have a goalie who can, you know, bail you out of a lot of situations, and it remains to be seen if they have that, but they'll have to have that. This team's going nowhere unless their goaltenders are really good.
They're going nowhere either if their penalty killing stays as 30th place in a 31 team league. Their penalty killing the last couple of years has been awful, and they give up one, power play goal every game. So you're behind 1-0 before the game even starts because you can only kill off 3 out of every 4 power plays. And most teams get 4 power plays in a game, so you're behind 1-0. So
that was their cycle. We were talking about it at the rink the other day. And it's just like, Koskinen would let in a bad one. The defense would give the other guys a backdoor tap in, and then they would get scored on the PK. And, there's your 3 goals in a 3-2 league. And that's why the Oilers were always sort of coming from behind. And they have to eliminate a couple of those freebies, whether it's the bad goal by Koskinen, whether it's the easy, defensive coverage breakdown that leads to the tap in or the PK goal. They have to shore up 2 of those areas to cut down the goals against, because that's what's been killing them.
I like to try to draw parallels to the past whenever I can, but it doesn't always work. Because when I think about the goaltending situation for the Oilers this year, I think back 20 years ago or whatever, when we had the tandem of Michael Stalenkov and Bob Esenza, and that obviously didn't work for the Oilers. They had a good enough team up front, but they had to go out and make a trade, bring Tommy Salo in to try to get into the playoffs. And, obviously that, this is different times. I mean, the trade market is probably not the same as it was back then. There's no salary cap back then and all that jazz. And, different financial times too. But you also had a different general manager .
I mean, the goaltending part, that was a good, very good analogy, because you're the only guy that would remember Mikhail Shalenkov. Well,
you guys too, come on.
And Bobby Esenza, who now is the goaltender coach for the Boston Bruins, so Bobby's pretty good as a goalie coach, for sure. They always talk about goaltending. We get 2 goalies, they'll push one another. I'd rather have 1 really good goalie, you could say, you know what, if we got to play this guy 2 out of 3, we're in good shape. Like Vasilevsky, say, in Tampa Bay, or Price in Montreal, the second half of last year where you had Binnington playing goal and winning almost every game in St. Louis. So it's good to have 2 goalies pushing one another in theory, but usually you would rather have 1 goalie takes it and says, you know what, I'm the guy and we're better off with me than the other guy. And the coach sees that too. So I don't know. I agree with Rob. I mean, obviously, Koskinen's stats at the end of the year weren't that bad. He was over 9, he got bad only after they traded Cam Talbot, where he had to play every game and he wasn't used to playing that. So even giving up the bad, goals, his stats weren't awful. But he has to be way more consistent. Game in, game out. And then Mike Smith, if he can play like he did in the playoffs last year, then they're fine. But one guy's 31, the other guy's 37. There's no magic elixir here. Mike, one guy hasn't played too many games in the NHL and the other guy's played a ton, but the other guy's 37. So we'll see.
Yeah. If at the end of the season, they're still running in like a 55, 45 or, 41 games each split, that's no good. Somebody has to step up and be the guy. And by Christmas, say, Mike Smith is starting 2 out of every 3 games, or Koskinen is starting 2 every, one of these guys has to step up and prove that he's an elite NHL goalie that can get a team into the playoffs and through a couple of rounds. Because if it's like, you get this game, you get that game, you get this game, you get that game, that means that one guy isn't stealing it, because the odds of them both being so good that you can't sit one for more than a game at a time is pretty unlikely. I think the best case scenario is somebody plays 75% of the games and somebody's a true backup at 25. And ideally you want that to be the guy who's making 4.25 for the next 3 years. So, well, remains to be seen, but that's kind of what they should be hoping for.
The guy with fewer miles on him. But
yeah, the 31-year-old with the 3-year contract, as opposed to the 37-year-old who's...
Circling back to forwards, so what are our line combinations going to be? I mean, McDavid was playing with well, the practice was lined up with Yurko and Neil, but are we going to see Draisaitl?
Draisaitl was again? With Nugent Hopkins.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah. Well, these injuries, like Yurko was hurt today, so that's why that happened. And then yesterday, Sheehan was out, so they, you know, had to go three centers.
Let's put it this way. It looks like Leon will play with either Nuge or Connor.
Yeah, which is a good line either
which
way.
Which is fine. You look at the centers, I can't think of a team in the league with three better centers than McDavid, Draisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins. But I see a lot of teams with better wingers that can score goals than the Oilers do, and it's nice to have the three centers. But if you don't have people on the line that can also with a pedigree for scoring goals, it spreads the offense around, but doesn't necessarily mean you've got one forward line that's really, really good.
Yeah, I would leave Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, and Cassian together. I really like the looks of that as a second line. And then hopefully if, you know, Neil and McDavid can develop some chemistry, then it almost doesn't matter who you throw in on the other wing. And that's, you know, that's, you've got your balance split up a little bit. And I think that could be a really effective, you know, twosome that eats up a lot of the minutes. And then you just put your third and fourth lines out there and, you know, don't give anything up. And you've got some penalty killing specialists, and that could be a formula. You know, ride your horses hard. You know, ideally you want to have a third line that's, you know, teams are going, instead of top six nowadays, it's top nine. You have three lines that can kind of contribute. I don't think the Oilers are there yet, but I know that if Neil is for real, and that, you know, I like the looks of that second line, I think they have a really solid top six.
When did Neil and McDavid play together in the preseason? They did play together.
A bunch,
right? Like more than one game. I mean, you know, McDavid played in two games. How did they look together?
Okay. I think everybody who plays with Connor McDavid looks better than okay. You know, they should be. He's the best player in the league. I think, you know, Neil and Connor both worked out in the summer with Gary Roberts, so they know one another from, you know, another picture show. So I think there should be some sort of synergy there, and I think Neil is used to playing with good, you know, really good players. He certainly did in Pittsburgh, and he certainly did in Vegas. So Nashville, he's used too. To playing, yeah. You know,
he was playing top line in
part for the last year in Calgary.
And in practice,
Calgary
they were together a ton. Like they
Calgary
were,
didn't last year because yeah. he just didn't seem to work, and he was on a third line. So,
even though McDavid wasn't playing a bunch of games, like in camp, they were skating together a lot. And Neil's looked good in camp as well. Like he's, you know, you don't want to say a guy has an excuse for the last year, but he has an excuse for the last year. He went to back-to-back cup finals and relocated twice. I mean, that's a lot to put on a human being's plate. You know, he gets a chance to decompress a little bit and has something to prove. And playing with Connor McDavid, and I expect him to get 25 this year. Like, we'll see. But I think that's they could have absolutely hammered Calgary on that trade.
Do you think Neil's more capable of getting that 20-25 playing with McDavid than Lucic would have?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, Milan's at his stage of the game now. He's in a different role. In Calgary, they want to play him with Derek Ryan, who's probably the best faceoff guy in the league. So it remains to be seen. I mean, I think there's a better chance, certainly, that Neil gets 20 than Lee, you know. Milan gets, you know, 15 in Calgary, say. But, you know, you got to kind of hope that Neil gives them another 20-goal score, because I don't know if we all love Alex Chiasson and the way he plays and what kind of guy he is. Is he going to score 22 goals? He was really good on the power play last year, not so good 5-on-5, and he even admitted that. If he still stays in a power play, he'll get some goals. If he's just going to play on a third line and not with, you know, McDavid or Nugent Hopkins or Draisaitl, I don't know how many goals Alex will score.
I think Lucic will do okay in Calgary. Like they don't need offense from him. That's fine. If he scores three goals for them, they're fine. They got all the offensive players they need on that team. They're set that way. They could just use a little bit of, you know, insurance for Tkachuk. Like, how big a jerk is he going to be to play against now that he has to, you know, he has this guy looking over his shoulder. You know, they just need him to be hard on the forecheck, to be, you know, to add to the, you know, the presence that they've had. And, you know, if he scores three goals, they're fine, because they've got Goudreau and Monahan and Tkachuk and all those guys and a Norris Trophy defenseman you know, they have the luxury of not needing that offensive production from him, but needing the other elements that he brings that the Oilers spoke very highly of. You know, Connor McDavid, when talking about Lucic, was glowing. He said, you know, if he doesn't score another goal, it's fine. He brings a lot to this team. And as the guy who often is the focus of the other team's checkers, and, you know, even though that part of the game is dying off, I think, you know, McDavid might see a little bit of a rougher ride this year that he doesn't have somebody like that looking after him. But I think Lucic will add a really a good presence to Calgary. They're a tough team to play against at the best of times, and I think he makes them a lot tougher.
I'd hope the likes of Zach Cassian and Darnell Nurse will have to
pick up the slack a little bit. And Milan doesn't have to fight anybody because nobody wants to fight Milan except maybe Ryan Reeves in Vegas, and they're the two most intimidating forwards in the league. So I agree with Rob. Milan's there to ride shotgun for Johnny Gaudreau and Monahan and let Tkachuk, you know, be the greasy, and Milan can be there to clean up the mess. So I guarantee you that when they made that trade, there was a lot of Calgary guys were texting the GM, says, hey, right on. Gaudreau for sure. The first one texting the GM said, thank you very much, because I'm getting a little tired of getting my hands whacked the entire game.
Edmonton physically ran roughshod over. Calgary won a few of the games, but, you know, physically, Calgary was on the receiving end of that series for a good, you know, since Lucic got here. And, you know, Calgary saw it up close. That's the reason they made that trade. Like, they're not, you know, it's not like they're the only team in the league that didn't realize that Lucic just looks like he's playing with a tennis ball out there. They want something else from him that they saw up hand, you know, face to face, and was they deemed to be very valuable. So I think, you know, it could be a win-win from each team, but at the end of the day, I think you'll get 25 from Neil and 6 or 7 from Lucic and all the other stuff that Milan will bring to the Flames to make their skill guys a little better too, just by his presence.
Now, it'd probably take a few games, but let's say, you know, James Neal isn't producing yet alongside McDavid or somewhere in the offense. At what point do the Oilers start seriously considering trading a defenseman for a forward that can help them? Like, the obvious candidates are, I would say, Darnell Nurse.
They're not trading Darnell Nurse. Sorry, I don't care what you say. They would trade Adam Larson.
What are they going to get though for Adam Larson? Though they're not getting Taylor Hall.
Maybe, yeah, they might get Taylor Hall.
They're not trading Darnell Nurse. Nope. They see Darnell Nurse as important to them as Josh Morrissey is, say, in Winnipeg.
Fine. So, what does Oscar Klefbom get you then?
I think Oscar Klefbom and Adam Larson would be traded before Darnell Nurse. Mm-hmm. Myself, but. You can't trade those players until you have players from your minor league team can come up and replace those players with similar attributes.
Yeah, once they see Baron Bouchard proving that they can do it over 40 National Hockey League games, then you'll have a little bit of wiggle room to do something like
or
that.
Or if Lagesson shows that he could play the same sort of style that Adam Larson plays in the NHL, then you could maybe trade Adam. So, but until then, you know, I don't know. You don't trade. I wouldn't trade too many defensemen for wingers either. You might want to trade a defenseman for a center, but the Oilers are loaded at center.
What do you trade for a winger then? Another winger? Or goalie? Draft picks?
They're waiting till their wingers, their forwards in the minors are ready to play. Benson and Yamamoto, I think, hopefully play in the top 9. So I don't know if they can, unless there's a player, you know, there's a forward out there in who's fallen out of favor with a team. I just don't see it.
Where's Shirelli? St. Louis now advising. So, you know, maybe they can move Adam Larson there and get, you know, maybe a top 6 forward back from the Blues. Let's see if that can come together.
I don't think that's quite happening.
No.
So, I don't think Tarasenko is coming to do it.
Tarasenko for Adam Larson. That's what we need.
So what are the chances this team makes the playoffs this year with this team?
It's not a great division. You know, there's the top of it is good, but I think, you know, the wild card spot can be had. But so much has to go right for a team that just basically has nothing go right for it. It's tough to say, you know, oh yeah, I think this is the year that they get in. If you're making me bet, I'm going to say yes, just because you can't miss every single year. At some point, you have to stumble your way in.
And other teams have to drop off.
Yeah, and it's the bizarre thing is they have the pieces that organizations wait decades to get, like a Draisaitl, a McDavid, a Nugent Hopkins. All they're being asked to do is surround them with, you know, ham and eggers that can not get in the way of this, and they haven't been able to do it. So, I mean, the guys they brought in aren't household names, and they're largely unproven, but it just, at some point it has to click, and they're not being asked to do much, like, you know, kick in 10 goals, you know, don't get scored on, don't be crappy on the penalty kill, just be slightly better than average, and McDavid and Draisaitl will take care of the rest.
One thing about Dave Tippett, his first year of coaching in every place, the team improved dramatically. It did in Arizona, it did in Dallas. His first year, the team improves dramatically. He has a magic wand with role players and turning them into better players. Certainly did that in Arizona. Made Toby Reeder into a really good player in Arizona, for instance. So, yeah, I think the role players they got are NHL players. But, you know, whether they can pick up the slack is another thing. I'm, you know, not to be a pessimist. On paper right now, the Oilers are in a group with LA and Anaheim and, say, Vancouver, where you're looking at them going, yeah, something's got to go right here for them to make the playoffs. Unless the bottom falls out of Vegas and San Jose and Calgary, they're in the playoffs. I think they've got better teams. Yeah. And
St. Louis.
So you're counting on then only four teams from the Central making it rather than, because that's been a tougher division than in the past. So one of those, I'm thinking one of those Central Division teams has to drop off that normally makes the playoffs, and that gives the Oilers and some of the other teams a chance to get into eighth. I don't see them finishing any higher than eighth in the conference. And 92, 93 points. Can they improve 15 points? That's a lot of points. And they need to be, they can't play the whole season just to get to 500. You know, okay, well, now we're at 500. Well, eventually you have to start chipping away at that 500 and get two games over 500, then four games, and then six games. And in the past, they don't start the season all that well. And next thing you know, they're at 500 or a couple of games under 500. And it's a fight just to get back to 500. And they somehow got to find a way to, by the end of November, be six games over 500 or something. And then they can, you know, chip away and try to be better than that.
Yeah, it's not a great omen when three of the guys they brought in to help are hurt on opening night two. It's like you import all these players for training camp. You speak really highly of them. There's Pearson, there's Yurko, there's Sheehan, and then opening night, you know, those guys are hurt, so we're going to have to go to plan B right out of the gate. So they need a good start. You know, you want the good vibes. You don't want to here we go again attitude. You want to, like, fresh face, new look Oilers, kind of a momentum thing. So, you know, you got two at home and then four on the road. And I think
those first six games, they're only playing one team that made the playoffs.
Yeah, they're winnable games for sure, but you got to win them, right?
And it's the Islanders. But then the other teams are looking at the Oilers saying, well, we can beat them. We're not in the playoffs last year, but we can beat them. So the first month of the season, they don't play the toughest teams off last year's, you know, point total. So you'd like to think they can get through the first month 500 or better. And if they're not, then it's another struggle.
That's the Oil Spills podcast for today. You can subscribe to Oil Spills via Apple's podcast app or iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you may access your podcasts.